Okay. First of all, I want to talk a little bit about the mentor thing I had. And I said, this is a look ahead assignment. I'm actually going to be sending you an email probably this weekend, maybe Friday, with the name of your mentor and contact information for your mentor. The assignment is actually going to be given the week after vacation, but if you vacation would be probably a good time to send out an email to the person asking or introducing yourself. So now let me tell you about the mentor thing. What we've done is we have contacted a lot of alumni from the CIS department, people that graduated from this department and have jobs in a variety of areas. And what we do is we link you to one of them. So that, and they've all agreed to be basically email mentors, okay? They don't have time for personal, or a few of them will occasionally say if you want to get together, but it's usually an email situation. And what you're going to do in this first assignment that I'm going to give you is you're going to basically interview them about their job. Find out, you know, what they do, how they like it, a variety of questions that you're kind of interested in finding out. You know, did they go on to school? Have they gone on to school? Have they taken other classes? Is this a job that builds directly on what they learned? Have they, you know, learned a lot of other things to make this job work, and how much on the job the training they've gotten and that sort of thing? Anything you're interested in finding out. And so the paper that you've got to write has got to be a combination of the results you get from talking to the mentor via email and your own research into a career that you think you'd be interested in. So those are the two things that you have to include in this paper. And essentially, you've got to contact the mentor. And the reason I'm putting it up now, and I will send you, I'm going away tonight, actually, and I probably won't be available till around Thursday, maybe Wednesday night, depends. But I will send them out probably Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And so over vacation, my suggestion would be that you send the mentor, think up the questions you want to ask, and send the email out to the mentor, because it usually takes them a little time to respond. Okay, so that's the homework assignment that I think it would be good to start over break. You can technically wait till the week after, yeah.
Do we know who's in what field? We'll have a list of that.
I try to connect you somewhat with the field that you're in.
Okay.
So I try, but I can't always. Mainly because I've got more, I tend to teach more on the programming side, and I've got more of my mentors are people I knew because they are obviously the ones I went and asked. But I've got quite a few from the networking side. You're in networking, right? No, security. I don't think I have anybody that's directly in security, but networking would be close because networking and security are mixed up in that major. So actually somebody that's been around in networking a lot is doing security. So I will try to do that. So anyway, these people are really good, but sometimes they take a little while to respond because they have a busy life. And so that's why I'm kind of suggesting that you send out the email maybe at the beginning of break so that they have time to compose an answer to you. So, now, the next part. If I have not gotten any homework papers from you, or I've only got one or two, then you're destined to not pass the course, at least unless I get a mirage of stuff from you. So at that point, I don't give you a mentor because I'm not going to bother these busy people with somebody that is not going to pass in homework to me because clearly it's just not going to work. So I don't give those people a mentor. If you start getting caught up and you send me an email and say, okay, I'm getting caught up, here's some stuff, and then I will give you a mentor. But if you're not participating in the class, then you're not going to participate in the mentor And the mentors tend to get aggravated when I tell them they're going to hear from these five people, and they only hear from two or three of them. Okay, I used to give out the names real early in the semester, but now I wait until I am convinced that you're involved in the class. So if you don't get a mentor, you can send me an email and argue about why I should give you one. But the decision is possibly a mistake, but probably not. Probably based on whether you've been giving me homework. Okay. That said, yeah.
Does the mentor name is going to be sent on our SBCC email?
You usually send it on your one that I've been communicating with you on, but it may go to your XSBCC. So, yeah, check your XSBCC. It may go there. It depends. I'm not promising. But check your XS. You should be checking your BCC once a week anyway. Or twice a week or something. Okay, so what we're going to do is look at some JavaScript. And we're going to go in and finish up a few things, and then we're going to look at the stuff that I have up here. So I'm going into programs, and I'm scrolling down, not as far. I move some things around. And we got through the nested loop last time, right? Somebody want to tell me where I am? Okay, nested while loop, right? Huh? Okay.
Yes.
You all were paying as much attention as I was, apparently. Problem is, I'm covering this in two classes right now. And so I'm not all together. Whoops, that's not the one I wanted. I wanted the nested while. And I'm going to do the view source on that. And make it smaller. And then I'm going to go in and get the nested do. And I am going to open that as well and look at the source on that, because what I basically want to do is compare these two. Okay. So these are two ways of doing nested loops. And the one we looked at before was a while that had a while inside of it. Okay? And I did go over this, right? Honest. As I said, I remember going over it in the class yesterday, so I'm just trying to remember if I am remembering wrong. The difference is here is I have a while loop over here, and the while loop has a condition at the top. I have a do loop over here, and the do loop has the condition at the bottom. Okay, so that's really the only difference, is the while loop has the condition at the top, and the do loop has the condition at the bottom. If you look across on these, you'll see that everything else is basically the same. Okay? I am setting up count. I am setting up count in. I'm doing these three things. All of these things are the same, except that the while at the bottom of the loop, I put a while that is my test, okay? And over here, I am putting the test up at the top. Okay, so those are the big differences, is I am doing my test at the bottom versus my test at the top. Okay, but everything else is coded the same. Questions, and you get exactly the same output. Okay, notice that I'm getting a red mark here, and the reason is that I forgot the slash before that HTML and I didn't validate, so therefore I didn't pick up on it. But it is red, which indicates that I had an error, and the one at the top is red, which indicates that it knows I have an error at the bottom. So I'm running into problems there. Okay. So here I have the loop within the loop, but I'm testing at a different spot. Other than that, these are the same. Okay. Now the next one is a for loop, and the nested for loop is really neat because it does everything for you. In the for loop, I have, this is where I set, this is where I test, and this is where I change. Now, in this one, I call them I and J, as opposed to count and count in, for absolutely no good reason, except that for some reason, people, when they write a for loop, always use I. They always say I equals, I equals, I equals. It's just almost kind of passed down through the generations. And so people tend to do that. So I did it here. And I'm saying, I have a variable I, and I'm setting it to 1. I'm going to test it and only work until it's no longer less than or equal to 3. And every pass through, I am adding 1 to I. The nice thing about the for loop is it does it for me. Okay? It will do it for me. It produces the output, and it figures out when I'm at the end of the loop by looking at the curly brace and checks to see if I should do it again. It adds every pass through the loop. So I don't have to worry about where to do the adding, where to do the testing. It does it all pretty automatically. And so all I have to have within the loop is the calculation where I add I and J and put in an answer, and the document write where I put it out. And that's all that I really need. So this is really a nice method to use when you're doing a simple kind of loop that's controlled by a count. If I was doing a more complex kind of loop where I'm asking the user, do they want to do the loop again? Or when I'm asking about, did the amount get over 500? Then this is not the one I would choose to use. But for a simple loop where I'm saying I want to do it 1, 2, 3 times, then this is a perfect situation. Okay? And you can see that the output comes out over on the side just the way it did in all the others. Okay. So, now what I'm going to do is move on and look at a guessing game. I'm going to skip the stuff about arrays. We'll look at that after break. I'm going down to these guessing games. So I'm going to click on guess number one guess, okay? In this particular one, I get one guess. Now, what I did is I cheated. I put the number you're supposed to guess up there. So I can get it one guess, no problem. But if I don't, let's say I put in a 3 and click OK, it comes back and tells me my guess is too high. And then it quits. So obviously this isn't what you'd call a game. But I'm going to build on this. So what I've got here right now is one guess and one guess only. Now, the first thing I'm doing here is I am getting a random number. Okay. Programming languages to generate a random number takes a lot of complex code. So all the programming languages that I know set up a function, and the function is get a random number, and you can use it. So in JavaScript, it's math.random, and that will get me a random number. So behind the scenes, there's a scenes. There's miles of code in there that are generating the random number. But all I have to do is say math.random. Now, I tell it, in this case, that math.random is going to give me a decimal number, 0 point something or other. I take the number, I multiply it by 5. Whatever number, this is going to be my high number. And this is going to be where I want to start. So if I put this in and I want to go from 1 to 25, I'd write 25 there instead of 5. If I want to go from 1 to 100, I'd write 100 there instead of 1, instead of 5 rather. If I want to start with 10 and go to 100, I'd have 100 plus 10. So that gives me my starting and my ending. Now, as I said, the random number gets generated as a decimal. So putting math floor in front of it basically means take the integer. Okay, so that little formula will get me a random number. And it gets me a random number from 1 to 5. Okay, so I first do math random. Notice the parenthesis, okay? I'm doing math random, and then I'm doing math floor on it. So math random is coming up with a number, and then I'm saying I want the floor, meaning the whole number version of that number. And then I want to add 1 to it, okay? Because it will start at 0, and I want to add 1. I don't need the add 1 if I want to have the first random number 0, but frequently you don't. So I wanted the first random number to be 1, so I put a 1 there. Okay. So now I've got a variable called the random number. And now I say, document right, because I'm cheating. Okay, if I were really doing a game, I'd take out this document right, because that's what wrote the answer up there in the corner. And if I don't want people to see the answer, I'm going to take out the document right. Okay, so I did a document write, then I did a BR to move down a line, and then I said, okay, now you put in your guess. And so I prompted them to enter a guess, okay? And I took whatever guess they entered, and I turned it into a parse integer. So I turned it into a whole number. Okay, so if I come down here and play this again, now it's 3, and if I put 3, I got the you got it. Okay. Now notice this time I didn't put the comma 0 after the prompt, and it gave me a blank screen, and it worked fine. Okay. Most browsers, it will, if you want to be sure of yourself, a comma and a quote will also get you a blank screen, and that's probably the more universal way of doing it. But no comma there also works. So I said, now my guess is a whole number. Now I want to compare them. And there's 3 possibilities. The random number can equal, it can be greater than, it can be less than. So I'm starting out and saying, if the random number equals my guess, you got it. Else, and I can choose any of the 2-3 things to ask, just like when we were trying to find out who got the most points on Thursday. So I'm saying now, if the random number is greater than my guess, that means the random number is bigger than my guess, so my guess is too low. So I put out the message, your guess is too low. Else, and I don't have to ask the other question because there's only one other possibility. The random number is less than my guess. That's the only possibility left. So your guess is too high is the message I put out there. And then I end. Okay, so I'm done. Okay, questions? Okay, now to turn this into a game, I've got to have a loop. So if you look at the next one down, I'm putting this within a loop. So I said, enter your guess 4, that's too low. Enter your guess 5, you got it. Okay, so now I'm putting it into a loop. Now I decided that this was a good opportunity to have a do with the test at the bottom, because I want everybody to play my game once. I want them to guess. So why test to see if they want to go into the loop? I'm just sending them into the loop. So I've got a do loop, and I am putting the while, which tells me, do you want to do it again? I'm putting the while down here at the bottom so that they will have to do it once. Okay? Now notice that I am keeping the random number outside the loop. If I put the random number inside the loop, then every time I went through the loop, it would come up with a new random number. Okay, so I'd be chasing a moving target. And I don't want to do that. So, therefore, I am putting the random number outside the loop. So, do one random number once up there at 5, and then I will always be testing against 5. If I reload this to play again, I'm going to get a new random number, or I might not. Okay, I got a 3. So I'm going to put in 2, it's too low. I'm putting in 5, it's too high. And now I'm putting in a 3, you got it. Okay, so I'm going through all of those guesses. So I come in here and I document right a blank line. And then I say, okay, take in my guess, the same as I did before. And then my if statement is exactly the same. So the only thing I've added to this program, really, is the do at the top and the while at the bottom. So, what gets me out? I want to get out if they get it. So my test down at the bottom says, if the random number is not equal to my guess, I'm going to keep doing it. So it ends up being a do while the random number is not equal to my guess. Okay, so I will keep doing it until they finally put in a match. And when they put in a match, then the random number is equal to my guess, and so it won't do it again. Okay. So if I come back here and I play it again, and it's a 3, and I enter a 3, you got it, I'm out of there. Okay? So if I enter the number right away, it comes down here. Is it equal? Yes, it is. Put out, you got it. Drop through. Is the random number not equal? No, it is equal. So I'm out of here. I'm out of the loop. But if it's not equal, I will go back to the do, write a blank line, ask the user for another guess, and then test their new guess. So I can stay in here forever as long as they don't give me the right number. Okay? Questions? If you don't ask questions, I make an assumption that you understand everything I've said. So, if that's not a true assumption, ask questions. I still can't talk into questions, huh? Okay.
Can I ask a question about the random number function?
Yeah.
From past experience, I've heard that the computer can't actually come up with a random number on its own. So, we've had to seed the random number function with another number. Does JavaScript automatically do that then?
Say that again? Does it do what automatically? Yes, the random number function is not pure, if that's what you're asking. It's not pure, but it's a close approximation. But anyway, what else?
That's pretty much it. Because you know, I've always had to do something like set it to like the timer to give it a number to feed off of to build that random number.
Really? Okay. This one, everything is behind the scenes. And it works well enough for a game. It might not work well enough for the stock market. But it's working well enough for a game. But yes, it's not perfect.
Curious.
It's not perfect. Definitely is not. Or at least I've read the same things, okay? I actually have never gone through and looked at the code. Okay, so I got it. Now it says, do you want to play again? I'm going to put in a Y, and it gives me now a 2. I'm going to say 4, I'm going to say 1, and then I'm going to say 2. And it says, you got it. Do you want to play again? I'll play one more time. It's asking for a 5 again. You got it. And now I'm putting in a capital N. Okay, so basically now I'm going to have 2 loops. I've got a loop within a loop. Okay, so my inner loop is controlling the game. So this is exactly the same as it was before. That's controlling the game. My outer loop is controlling whether or not I want to do the game again. So it will play again. So notice that the generating of the random number happens between the two loops. Because it happens before I do a game. When I'm out of a game, I will come back up to this do, and it will generate a new random number for me. Okay, so I generate a new random number for each game, but I don't change it within the loop. Okay, so actually, since Mac's here, I'm going to stop for a second. Max will be here Thursday from 9:30 to around 2. So if you want to use it as a work session, this room's available from 9:30 to 2, and Max will be here. But Max won't be helping at 11 o'clock because that's when a guest speaker comes in. So he'll basically help the class before this and the class after this. But we've got a guest speaker from Meditech coming in. Meditech hires a lot of our students, and they are now opening a new plant in Foxborough, which is going to be opened probably at the end of 2014, or in 2014, sometime. I think I've read 2014, the end of 2013. So, if you're interested, it's a good thing to come and listen to him talk and kind of get an idea of the jobs that they have. So I would strongly recommend that you come. Terry Ott will also be here. He's an ex-student of mine, and some of you will get him as a mentor. And he will be here also talking with Greg. And then Pat Condon from Student Services will come over. So that's your class on Thursday. I've invited my other classes to come as well, so they may come. So Thursday, you got to pay attention at 11 o'clock as opposed to work, and then you can go back after they leave to work. Okay? So that's what's happening on Thursday. Now, Max also said he would be willing to come in on Friday and hold a help session, but only if he hears from enough people asking him to do it. In other words, he doesn't want to make the drive and then twiddle his thumbs. Under week 6, I have an address. If you go and look on my site, it's under week 6 is Max's address, and you can click on that and tell him you want to come.
Tutoring request, and then it's at the bottom of the tutoring request. There's a way of emailing me through my website.
Okay. So you can go in there, or you can probably catch up with Max sometime today and tell him, and he'll maybe believe you and maybe not. But if you catch up with Max and tell him to come in, he'll believe you, I think.
Was the old adage, trust but verify? I'd much rather have the email.
So back to this. So I will keep the game going until the random number is equal to my guess. And at that point, I drop out, and this comes up. Play again. Do you want to play again? Yes or no? And at that point, I will type in a Y or an N or anything else that I want to type in. What will get me out?
Capital N.
And a capital N only. because I said do and it's while play again is not equal to N. So if you type anything other than a capital N, you're going to play again. If you type a capital N, you're out. Now, I could have made the other decision. I could have said, while play again equals Y. And I could have made them type a Y if they wanted to play again. And then anything other than a Y would have got them out. So as the programmer, I can make the decision about what I want to test down there. And I basically said, to get out, they're going to have to type a capital N. Anything else, I'm keeping them. Okay, but I could have made the reverse and said to keep playing. Okay, I can also change this and say while play again is not equal to N and it's not equal to a lowercase n. And I can use a lowercase n. I can also use a conversion from uppercase. And I put that on your page that you can go look at the conversion to uppercase. So I can basically say when I prompt them, I can take whatever they type in and convert it to uppercase so that if they type in a lowercase y or a lowercase n, it will be the same as if they typed an uppercase y or an uppercase n. Okay. And that's what most commercial things do. They don't trust you to type the right case in. Okay, so that's the game, and that will keep playing until somebody types an uppercase N, and at that point, they get out. Questions? Okay, then we're going to look at a couple of other possibilities. On this one, I'm going back to my PEM page, and I said, okay, here's the solution to problem number one from way back when. Remember when you had to write this code? We wrote it in class, and we generated the answer for the 815, and I had you do this by playing computer, and you had to come up with the 4815 by playing computer. Here, I have now got it so that it is coded. And I have a while loop. And I'm saying do while second num is less than or equal to third num. And I'm going in then and saying if first num is greater than 500, do this, else do that. And I am doing this until second num is no longer less than or equal to third num. And at the bottom, I am now saying when I drop out of the loop, take first num, take second num, take third num, add them together, and write out the result. So I'm seeing my result up there. So that's the code. You played computer. Now I'm showing you this is the code that generated that number. Okay? And I can write that code and run it on the computer, and it has to work a lot less hard to generate the right answer than you had to. And it doesn't make callous mistakes. That's the nice part. Okay, now again, I'm going to go in and leave that, and I'm going to open it with the do while solution and look at that and compare these two solutions. So when I compare these two solutions, they're basically exactly the same, except one of them has the condition at the top, and one of them makes me go through it once before it tests to see if I should go back. On this one, I probably like the while better, because if somebody gave me numbers that meant it wouldn't go in at all, I would like it not to go in at all. So I probably would like to use the while. So if somebody gave me a second num that was not less than or equal to third num, I'd like to get out immediately. So I would prefer the while. But the do while works. It's just that I would go through it once and then discover I should get out. So those are two ways that you can do that. And I did the same thing with the next one that you had to do. This is the next problem that you had to do, where I said, okay, come in here, take first num, add it to second num, put it in work answer, and now check work answer against third num, and there's my if. And at the bottom I said count equals count plus one, and I was doing this while count was less than six. And so I went through the whole thing, only this time I'm writing it in the code. Okay, I had you in class, we went over the pseudocode. Now this is the code that matches with that pseudocode. So if I go back and I go into the practice exercise we looked at, okay, there's the pseudocode for number two. And there's the actual code. And so you can see that it's very similar. There's the pseudocode. And I set everything up, and then I said, do while count is less than six. And it's very similar, except I had to add in some parentheses here. I had to add in some curly braces and that kind of thing to turn it into a programming language. I had to put the semicolon at the end of the line. I had to do stuff to turn it into a program. But essentially, in fact, the hard work is done when I do the pseudocode. Because once I know the logic, if I'm comfortable with the language, it's a piece of cake to turn it into the language. Okay? If I don't know the language, then that's not true. But once I know the language, it's easy to turn it into the language. It's figuring out the logic that's my problem. Solving the problem is my usual problem. Okay. So, questions? Okay, I'm going to look at a PowerPoint now that has some if things in it, and then you're going to work on that as well. There is another quiz that's due Thursday night by midnight, so I will expect to see a lot between 11 and 12 on Thursday night, which is, tends to be when I pick up everything, but try to get it in a little before that, maybe, and then you'll make sure. And there is a second JavaScript assignment. Okay, so we're going to look at the JavaScript if PowerPoint. What I did is I did a flowchart, and I said, note that I've got year birth and marital status meets criteria. A note, either of them, it does not meet the criteria. Okay, so this is requiring that both be true, and if they're not, then does not meet criteria is applies to both of them. So it means I can do a compound and. So this is the result. I can do a compound and. I can say, if your birth and marital status do this, else do the other one. Okay. Now on this one, I've got a different things for the no's. I've got different things for the no's. So there I have to write them out separately. So I said, if year of birth is greater than 1980, if marital status equals M, do that. Else, write, you're not married. The else on the year birth writes, your birth year is not greater than 1980. Okay? So I have different no's, so I have to ask the questions separately so that on the else to the question, I can put out the appropriate answer. Okay, so if the no's do not generate the same, I have to ask questions separately so I can make the right response to getting it wrong. this is an or. I said, you live in Massachusetts. Does the state equal Massachusetts? You live there. If not, you live in Rhode Island. Otherwise, you lose. And these are very similar to ones that I did in JavaScript before. So this one can be compound because state Mass, state Rhode Island, I just want to say you live in the state. So I want to say the same thing. So that can be turned into a compound. So I'm saying if the state is Mass or the state is Rhode Island, you live in the state. Otherwise, you don't live in the state. However, if I come down here and I want to actually put out the literal, you live in Mass, you live in Rhode Island, therefore they're different. And therefore, I need to ask separate ifs. So I'm going to say, if the state is Massachusetts, write, you live in MA. Else, if the state is Rhode Island, write, you live in RI. Else, write, you don't live in either of them, you lose. Okay? Then the next one. And pay attention to this one, please, because this one I'm still getting problems on. This one is saying year birth has to be greater than 1980, and either of those two things has to be true. I don't care which of those things is true, but one of them has to be. Okay, so this has to be true. That has to be true. Because if it's not, I'm out of here right away. This one is the either. And either of these has to be true. If either of them is true, I'm just saying meet criteria. If there's a problem, I'm saying doesn't meet criteria. And when I code that, I have to say, if it's greater than 1980, and either, and I have to put those parentheses in, because ands get resolved before ors, and if I don't put the parentheses in, it will take that as asking about year birth and marital status, and gender will stand alone. Okay, so I gotta do that. And I'm going over this mainly because there is some confusion out there. Okay, now this one, I'm saying everything has a different response. So that means I'm going to ask them all separately because all of those responses are different. So I got to ask them all separately. So if I come in here now, and if you can't read up here, open it on your screen. If your birth is greater than 1980, I can continue. Else, I'm out of here. Document right, you don't meet the criteria on your birth. I'm out of there. That has to be true. If it is true, then I come in and say, is marital status equal to M? If it is, I'm happy and I write out the fact that they're married. Else, I have a second possibility, and that is gender female. So I can ask, is the gender female? If it is, put out the criteria. You meet the criteria because you're female. Okay, so basically I want people born after 1980 who are either married or women. Okay, don't want single men. Okay, so then I go back, and if I don't meet either of these, I say you do not meet the criteria on marital or gender, and so you're out of there. Okay? Notice the parenthesis and how they work. Okay. If you look at the parenthesis, these go together, these go, these, that, and that. You have to watch those curly braces. I said parenthesis, I meant curly braces. But watch the parenthesis too in the earlier version of this. Okay, so now you are going to write these three, please. So I want you to take some time now. We've got about a half an hour, and we'll see how it goes. But I want you to write those three. So bring up the JavaScript, and I want you to do the JavaScript and write the programs to do those three. These aren't to pass in, they're just practice. But I'm going to bug you. And these should be starting to be familiar to you, and that's my goal, that you are... get to the point that you can do these without a lot of thinking. And then when you get done, if you get done before the time, I would like you to take one of them and put it inside a loop that lets the user control. So where it asks the user, do you want to do it again, yes or no? So I'd like you to put one of them inside a loop that lets the user control things. Go back and look at the earlier things on this PowerPoint because that's where I'm doing them. and so you want to be able to see how it works. I've got an and, I've got an or, and I've got a this and either of those illustrated on here. And so you ought to be able to go back and find them. And by the way, it says it has to be passed in. It doesn't. I should change that. One year I had this a pass in. Now I'm having it in class. And it doesn't have to be passed in. I'm making you do it the whole of this. You can either call Max or I over, or you can go look over Max's shoulder.
Yeah, apparently, everybody wash your hands and cover your mouths because the pre-spring break plague is going around.
Oh, really? Neat.
We've had a couple of people already out today.
Oh, good. So I'm not leaving town soon enough, huh?
Purex on, like, all the walls.
Thank you. Thank you. Go look at my examples and try to figure out what it is.
Right.
CI as well. So that was a twofer problem.
I did it, and then, like, I don't like messages, so, like, I was just, I don't know.
Bob's interview.
That's just if you want to add.
Sometimes that can be the console connection is open. Sometimes not so much. Again, Notepad++ will give you some errors, so that might be a better thing to do it in. And don't forget the web developer error console, because that gives you errors as well. So if you use the error console, that can give you some errors that can save you. Especially things like undefined words and that sort of thing, it knows about. Scroll to the bottom. And it's saying that
replacing Billy Brace songs after condition.
Word letter on a place.
Okay, so you're separate if statements. Yeah, that's fine.
I thought about using that. I didn't know if that was what you wanted. So
doesn't matter. I wanted you to solve the problem. And yeah, right. I mean, it doesn't matter unless I specify a style. Then it doesn't matter how you solve the problem, as long as you solve it correctly. So something worked, huh?
All I had to do was steal your number game.
Yeah, no, basically that's it. And now what you have to do is start casting one. Now that you mentioned things you have to do.
Yeah, that's actually what I did for this was
Instead of a G, but I do it consistently, it's happy. That's right. In fact, I misspell lots of times on purpose. Because if I think I'm using a word with the computer language has a meaning for, I misspell it. That's right. But as long as you pound the same way every time. And that being...
I just have a seizure on the computer.
That being the problem, it has to be the same every time. Okay, guys, keep in mind as vacation comes up, 80% of your grade is homework. And quizzes is only a very small percentage of that 80%. So, if I don't get homework, it's an easy grade for me to calculate.
Oh, that's right. Because we have to...